Welcome to Afterglow. I'm your host, Mark Chilla. This week on the show, I'm doing something a little unusual. Instead of focusing on a singer or songwriter from the past, I'm going to focus on someone working today, although writing music that sounds like the past. His name is Vilry. He's a songwriter, singer, and guitarist, and one half of the duo Rachel and Vilry, along with his old friend, singer Rachel Price. I featured their music on the show before, and for this episode, I actually got a chance to sit down with Vilry. We'll hear parts of my interview, as well as a few original songs he recorded for the broadcast. And we'll hear some of his work with Rachel and Vilry. That's all ahead. It's The Vintage Voice of Vilry, coming up next on Afterglow.
Terribly, terribly, terribly thrilling. I love the way you're breaking my heart. Although you wanna ruin it, it's heaven while you're doing it. I love the way it feels when we kiss. It's terribly, terribly, terribly irresistible. So now, so darling, just keep playing your part, 'cause I love the way you're breaking my
Rachel and Vilry, from their self-titled 2019 album for Nonesuch Records, and the song I Love the Way You're Breaking My Heart. John Eric Kelso was also featured on the trumpet. This was one of the two songs on the album not written by Vilry. Instead, it dates back to the early 1950s, written by veteran songwriters Louis Alter and Milton Drake. It was never the most popular song by them. Alter wrote songs like You Turn the Tables on Me, and Drake wrote lyrics to songs like Java Jive, but I Love the Way You're Breaking My Heart was originally recorded in 1951 by Miss Peggy Lee.
I love the way you're breaking my heart. It's terribly, 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 terribly thrilling. I love the way you're breaking my heart. Although you're gonna ruin it, it's heaven while you're doing it. I love the way I feel when we kiss. You're terribly, terribly, terribly irresistible. Side of me and lie to me, you really know how it's gonna hurt tomorrow, but it feels so good now.
The law forbids it, but let's do it all the same. Darling, let's make love on this plane.
You come to know me between Washington and Spain. Darling, let's make love on this plane.
Mark Chilla here on Afterglow. What you're listening to now is the duo Rachel and Vilry, two marvelous musicians in their 30s making music that sounds like it comes from the 30s.
Sweet Avocadin tree, his older brother
clouds beneath us and our engines all aflame. Darling, let's make love on this.
On this week's show, I'll be highlighting their music, as well as featuring parts of an interview I had with one half of that duo, Vilry, who writes most of their music in addition to playing guitar and singing. Now, writing music in an older style is nothing new, and Vilry is hardly the first contemporary artist to create a vintage 1940s sound. But from my perspective, few songwriters seem to get the mid-century songwriting style as well as Vilry. And it's not just the melodies. Everything from the song structure to the harmonic choices to the clever wordplay, and even how he and fellow singer Rachel Price pronounce the words, it's all drawn from that era, although with an unmistakable timeless quality. For instance, take what we've just been listening to and compare it to, say, Nat King Cole and the King Cole Trio in 1947.
You're just too marvelous, too marvelous for words, like glorious, glamorous, and that old standby amorous.
That's the 1937 Johnny Mercer and Richard Whiting tune, Too Marvelous for Words. And you can hear echoes of this kind of songwriting, phrasing, arranging, all within Rachel and Vilry. But on top of that, there's the interplay between both singers. That fun back and forth draws directly from many of the best songs from the 1940s. For instance, here again is Johnny Mercer, a big influence on Vilry, and his 1944 duet with Joe Stafford called Conversation While Dancing.
Do you know what's groovy? Have you seen the latest movie? Should I try and tip you?
May I hip you? Yes, I know.
Do you know what's playing? Have you heard what the folks are saying? Should I try and sell you?
May I tell you? Yes, I know.
I can see, baby.
Everything from their tone to those playful lyrics can be heard in a song like Treat Me Better, a Vilry original from Rachel and Vilry's 2019 album.
Here's a tender serenade.
Oh, you should treat me better. Let's hear the operetta complete.
Emeralds on the promenade.
Oh, you should treat me better. These hardly even glitter, my sweet.
Vilry is is more or less a newcomer to the music scene. After a hand injury in college sidelined his music career, he started pursuing it again recently by writing songs and performing in his hometown of Brooklyn. This caught the attention of his old friend Rachel Price. You might know the name Rachel Price. She's a public radio staple at this point, and she's most well known as the lead singer of the pop group Lake Street Dive.
Would it be true to say that I ordered you? Or is it you that ordered me?
Rachel and Villery's story starts many years before Villery's recent return to music. The two met back in college. They studied music together at the New England Conservatory about 15 or so years ago. I'll play now parts of my recent interview with Villery, recorded from our respective home studios, me in Bloomington, him in Brooklyn. Here's Villery.
We met in orientation week, I think, of our freshman year at the New England Conservatory in Boston. And I don't know, Rachel has some sort of story that I was mean to her, or generally speaking, you know, curt. And maybe I was, I totally believe it. It was kind of I think that transition from living at home to being quasi independent as a student leaving town for the first time is a tough one. And I probably was hard on my peers, but, anyway, I remember liking her and being charmed by her, and we didn't really have any classes together. So I don't know that we were great friends when we went to school together. But I was very close friends with the members of Lake Street Dive, particularly Michael Calabrese and Mike Olson, who both lived on the floor that I lived on. So we got very close. And once they started a band together, I got to know Rachel and Bridget. And so we've been friends for a very, very, very long time. But we only had a few interactions, I think, when we were at school together. I was only at school for 2 years.
But you did not perform with her in college at all.
Never, no.
So you were once a music student in college in the early aughts. I can relate. I was also once a budding music student in college in the early aughts. You said freshman 2003. That was my freshman year of college as well. What was your career path at the time?
Well, you know, I was there studying jazz composition, and the New England Conservatory had has probably still a very progressive kind of program that is very into avant-garde music. And so I was deep into that world and listening to a lot of Ornette Coleman and Eric Dolphy and Cecil Taylor, and writing music for a trio, actually, with Mike Olson and Mike Calabrese. And we just played kind of, we called it silly free jazz or something like that. It was kind of, the idea was to be lighthearted in our avant-garde music. And then 2 years in, I basically realized I couldn't afford to do this. Not so much that I couldn't afford to study free jazz, but that I couldn't afford to study anything at the New England Conservatory. So I came back to Brooklyn and I worked for a lighting manufacturer for many, many years, 12 years, I think, all told. And it was only a few, 5 years ago, something like that, that I retired from that. And since then, I've been a full-time musician. But between the New England Conservatory and that moment, I was really a very sort of hobby-based musician, writing songs maybe every couple of years and you know, doing it all in my bedroom.
So how did you and Rachel Price then reconnect a couple of years ago?
We had actually tried. She moved back to Brooklyn she moved to Brooklyn from Boston. And we were friends. And at some point she said, you know, we should play music together. We really like this old jazz. We could play together. And I was like, you know, I don't really play that much anymore. I would feel very self-conscious playing with you. And she said, well, let's try it. And we did try it. And it was kind of not, you know, I didn't know any tunes and I was very rusty. I had never really been a, you know, rhythm guitar player. To the extent that I was a guitar player when I was studying music at NEC, I was studying composition, and it was just kind of, an outlet to write with. So it was difficult, and we had one session that didn't work out that great. And then it was sort of once I picked up music again, she came to one of my shows and she said, well, great, it seems like you've got it figured out, and I really want to do this with you. And so we started playing together, and then we were having fun.
Two friends, two hearts, too many nights to count them.
So what's it like singing with her?
It's fun. There are no challenges. I mean, it's a weird way to sing. We share one microphone and we face each other. So in a way, I was able to get over a lot of stage fright that I had when we were starting out, because she was a little bit my only audience member that I was aware of.
Do friends fall in love like this? A love that once was merely warm now blazes with an ardent desire. A touch that once was just a touch burns hotter than a five-alarm fire. Oh, say you're mine for all our days to follow. What was innocent before has become a grand amour. Two friends fell in love like this.
It's an unusual way to sing, but it's really just fun. We get a lot of sense for how the tempo's going, and in terms of interpretation from just glances in each other's eyes, you can kind of be a little more spontaneous, a little more elastic with things when you're just playing with one other person and you're locked in with your eyes with them. And she's, of course, the most beautiful singer, and just so great to write for, and to hear your music realized from her voice is so special.
Are there certain composers that you're trying to emulate when you write songs?
I love Johnny Mercer. I think Johnny Mercer, you know, he's a singer. So he, like me, I think, understands how the mouth's inner workings can hinder or help the interpretation of a song. And I think when, as a lyricist and as a composer and as a singer, his things are just like really tight, and they do exactly what he wants them to do. They have the humor when they need the humor. They have, you know, the heartbreak when that's his aim. And again, he's like not an incredible singer. He's not Frank Sinatra. He's not Bing Crosby, but he's like very human.
You got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In-Between. You got to spread joy up to the maximum, bring gloom down to the minimum. Have faith or pandemonium, liable to walk upon the scene. To illustrate my last...
And Matty Melnick, who's not a name that's thrown around a lot, he wrote a song called If You Were Mine for Billie Holiday.
If you were mine, I could be a ruler of kings. And if you were mine, I could do such wonderful things. I'd say to the stars, stop where you are. Light up my lover's way, and every star above you would obey. Say,
it is just an absolutely gorgeous song, undercovered, but it's so good, and Billie Holiday's version is transporting and incredible. And talk about harmonic motion that's original and beautiful. That's what I love about the Tin Pan Alley sound, is that it covers all the emotional bases. It's great.
Even my life, I'd trade it all for you, and think I was lucky too, if you were mine.
When did you start writing songs for you and Rachel to sing?
it was kind of after we started playing together that I started writing. I think maybe I had written one song in this project of kind of writing for musicians who were long dead, who I love, Fats Waller and Billie Holiday and Frank Sinatra. And so I think I had one song by the time we started playing together. We were playing not really standards, but obscurities of the jazz age. Then once I started writing, you know, I think Rachel is such an incredible interpreter of that style of music that if I wrote songs that worked well enough in that style, she could interpret them her way. But I found the best success in kind of writing for people of that era, because different singers from that period, they're attracted to different kinds of songs and different kinds of languages and different kinds of, you know, accents, and it's a complicated thing, and so a Fats Waller song is a pretty different beast than an Ella Fitzgerald song, you know, because they like different things.
Gotta get my old tuxedo dress, gotta sew a button on my vest, cause tonight I've got to look my best, Lulu back in town. Gotta get a half a buck somewhere, gotta shine my shoes and slick my hair, got to get my soul bootin' there, Lulu's back in town. You can tell all my pets, all my Harlem coquettes, Mr. Otis regrets that he won't be around. You can tell the mailman not to call, I ain't coming home until the fall, and again I might not get back home at all, Lulu's back in town, yeah.
You don't hear Fats Waller sing too many Cole Porter songs. He's singing stuff that's kind of written for him. I found writing songs for Fats Waller could work out as interpreted by Rachel Price. But we spent a few years working together, and more of our set became original songs by me. And then by the time we were ready to make the record, there were enough of those that I think it's 10 out of 12 songs on the record are mine. So, you know, I guess I wouldn't quite say that I'd written them for her, but I'd written them, and she interprets them amazingly well.
There's no true love, there's just good luck, and good luck keeping that, my friend, it runs out in the end. There's no true love, there's no and touching though it may be, it's not enough for me. There's no true love. I've seen a thousand happy endings, but they're only for the lovers on the screen. And all these songs I sing of love, there's no true heart, it's just routine. And if you found a rut you like, you hold on to it tight. There's no true love, there's no
When you're writing these songs, you know, you mentioned Fats Waller, for instance. So which song or songs on the album is your Fats Waller tune, for instance?
I think At Your Mother's House could definitely be a Fats Waller song, but it could also be, you know, kind of an older blues form or a later, you know, Big Joe Turner kind of song. Yeah, so I think that's one that, although it doesn't work as well as a song sung by a man. I mean, I sing it in my sets, but it's a little more disgusting as a song sung by a man than it is a song by a woman. I think that's one that's probably a Fats Waller tune.
Everybody knows there's only one place I go when I want to hear the news. That's to your mother's house, talk about you. She shows me pictures of little you in the said farewell. But I'd never agree if you asked it of me to bid goodbye to your mama as well. As all your lovers know, there's only one place to go when you want to hear the news. That's to your mother's house, where we all talk about you.
Any other songs inspired by Fats Waller?
Go On Shining, which is one we do with John Batiste on the record. That was written 100% as a Fats Waller song. Yeah, he sings very funny songs, and then he sings these beautiful kind of spacey songs. He's got this song called Jitterbug Waltz, which is very famous, and it's just an incredibly weird song. It's almost like a Pink Floyd thing or something. It's just like very trippy in its harmonies. Was one of the things I was thinking about when I wrote that song.
I can't believe the stars up above would go on shining if you weren't mine. Each light is a reflection of love. I know they glow because you're by my side. Just when I blink my eyes, you vanish and it breaks my heart. And then I open them again. Darling, tell me why we ever part. And now the lamps burn down and evening comes to shroud my sight. Your eyes of brightest day, honey, can I be beside your light? I pray to all the stars up above, go on shining on this love of mine.
Rachel and Villery with John Batiste performing Villery's original song, Go On Shining. Before that, we heard Rachel and Villery with clips of the songs At Your Mother's House and There's No True Love. I've been talking to Villery this hour, and we've been discussing some of his influences as a songwriter. Many of his influences, as you can imagine, come from the 1930s and 40s. And some of his songs, like his original song, The Laundromat Swing, were directly influenced by earlier musicians. Here's Villery.
The Laundromat Swing is 100% a Mills Brothers song. The Mills Brothers, they sing songs where the lyrics are propelling the swing of it. Every consonant, every vowel is like doing a job that acts as a propellant for the swing.
And you like your music torrid till it makes you mop your forehead. I've got swing for sale. Rhythm is what this country needs. For years and years I've said it. And when you buy from me, it's COD as a swing. But not for credit. There's no telling what can happen.
I can start your toes a tapping. I can set your fingers snapping. I've got swing for sale.
So I was trying really hard with that song to get every phrase to propel the feel forward, you know. And starting off with the line, drop your lucky nickel down the money slot. I thought that was like a very, you know, you could feel all the pops of all the consonants, and the vowels were very short and clipped. And you know, it feels more like a snare drum than a lyric in a kind of way. And that's a really magical element to the Mills Brothers that I spent a long time trying to figure out.
Drop your lucky nickel down the money slot, then toss your dirty drawers where it's piping hot. If you want to take your baby to the dancing spot, you've got to do the laundromat swing. Every working fella on a Friday night by 20 after 5 is getting right. If you're gonna show the lady she's a true delight, you've got to do the laundromat swing. I know you plan to spend the afternoon just lazing, but every woman wants a man who smells amazing.
You must get clean to show your queen just who a king is.
Iron out your shirt if you want to flirt. Every fella kissing ain't missing the stitch around his collar. Take your frizzy mop and do the barber shop. Then buy the flower boy out of his old crop. Everybody knows a lover boy is bound to flop if he doesn't do the laundromat swing. Oh, you got to do the laundromat swing. Boo da ba doo da ba doo da da da. I know you plan to spend the afternoon just listen, but every woman wants a man who smells amazing.
You must get clean to show your queen just who a king is.
Iron out your shirt if you want to flirt. Every fella kissing ain't missing the stash around his collar. Take your frizzy mop into the barber shop. Then buy the flower boy out of his old crop. Everybody knows a lover boy's bound to flop if he doesn't do the laundromat swing. Oh, you got to do that laundromat swing.
Rachel and Vilry and their original song, The Laundromat Swing. Coming up after a short break, I'll feature more of my interview with singer and songwriter Vilry. Plus, we'll hear two original songs that he recorded for me from his Brooklyn apartment. Stay with us. I'm Mark Chilla, and you're listening to Afterglow. Welcome back to Afterglow, I'm Mark Chilla. We've been exploring the music of the duo Rachel and Vilry this hour, a pair of singers who perform new music in the style of vintage songs from the 30s and 40s.
I can't go to sleep. Evening falls, dreamland calls.
I've also been featuring parts of an interview I had earlier with Vilry, one half of that duo, as well as the guitarist and songwriter for the group. When we talked, he and I discussed some of his influences, both as a songwriter and guitarist. His guitar influences, as you might imagine, come mostly from the mid-20th century. Here's Vilry again.
Oscar Moore in the Nat King Cole Trio. Merle Travis. I like guitar playing that is kind of orchestral or really filling a function on its own. It doesn't need much assistance, and it's either playing the part of the drummer, or it's playing the part of the bass player, or it's playing the part of the horn section. And I try this alternating bass thing. I do it okay, but Merle Travis is, of course, the originator of Travis picking, which alternates bass lines while he finger picks. You know, it's amazing how big his guitar playing sounds and full. And if he's playing solo, you're not missing anything. As a person who plays alone a lot, you know, I want it to feel like fulfilling experience and not kind of a singer-songwriter guy alone with a guitar strumming thing. I want to be a little hearkening back to the fullness of the sound of a solo guitar and singers.
Let's talk about your songwriting process. Are you thinking melody first, harmony first? Do the lyrics happen first?
Yeah, kind of things happen all at once a little bit. I love interesting harmonic motion, and I'm always trying to find something interesting to play off of, a harmonic relationship that isn't purely diatonic, you know, passing through multiple keys and so forth. There's just a lot of really interesting work that was going on in Irving Berlin tunes, you know, Cole Porter tunes. And so I am often interested, particularly when I'm writing ballads, in a harmonic motion. And often that harmonic motion dictates what the melody is going to be like, and often the melody dictates what the lyrical content is going to be like.
We always knew that I was too young for anything beyond just your selfish bit of fun. Right from the start, without a thought for my heart.
Without a Thought for My Heart passes through a lot of different keys. It starts off very much in one range, and then it's got this big jump almost immediately. I was writing it for Peggy Lee, who is just an incredibly beautiful human voice and so vulnerable in her singing.
Love is funny, or it's sad, or it's quiet, or it's mad.
And so soft in her singing that when those jumps happen, you can hear all of her humanity in it, because she doesn't have enough breath really to like nail it. I mean, she's in tune, but it's like you can hear the guttural aspects of her throat, and it's just like so intimate.
To take a chance, and if you fall, you fall. And I'm thinking,
and I know Rachel is not that kind of singer, and I was so curious about how it would sound if she was singing quietly and she was not quite straining, but you know, working to hit a note, as opposed to having all the support that she usually has as like kind of a belting Ella Fitzgerald style, you know, professional, very you know, A-plus singer. And I was not disappointed. It took us a while to get there, to get her feeling like she could be that vulnerable. But I think that song asks a certain thing of a singer and has kind of a harmonic instability that appeals to me.
That was Vilry talking about his songwriting process. Let's play now one of the ballads on that record he made with singer Rachel Price, and a ballad that I think is one of his finest, something that you might find in the repertoire of, say, Ella Fitzgerald. The concept behind this song is simple. It's a story about an introvert finding true love. This is Rachel and Vilry with Vilry's original song, Alone at Last, on Afterglow.
Once was a agoraphobic, Times Square would make me gasp. I let full trains go past with you. I feel alone at last. Parties would make me nervous. Spent all night filling my glass. Smoked cigarettes on the grass.
Rachel Price of the band Lake Street Dive and guitarist and songwriter Vilry with their song Alone at Last from the 2019 album Rachel and Vilry. When I talked with Vilry a few weeks ago, we were each self-isolating in our respective homes. Me recording from my makeshift home studio in my basement in Bloomington, Indiana, Vilry recording in his much nicer home studio in his apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Between the pandemic and the protests, it's been a difficult time, and not just for musicians, for everybody. Here's Vilry.
You know, all things considered, I'm okay. And yeah, I've been getting out to protest. I was pretty nervous about it at first, given the pandemic. And maybe I will live to see my nervousness borne out in bad ways. But everybody's been wearing masks and, you know, I'm getting by.
But it's also been kind of an inspiring time for you. You've written several songs while in quarantine. You've released them on social media. How do you find inspiration at a time like this?
Oh, well, I mean, in a way, you know, they always say never write a song about the current moment because it's dated, you know, 3 seconds later. But the music that I write is kind of instantly dated anyway, because I'm sort of hearkening back to this older period. And, you know, there are a lot of great examples of songs from yesteryear, the jazz era, that deal with things like World War II or the Depression or what have you, folk songs also. So it just seemed kind of natural to try to explore this thing that the whole world is experiencing at the same time from the perspective of a Tin Pan Alley. You know, they would be trying to get things out on the radio too that would speak to the moment back in the day. So that's really where I'm coming from.
One of those original songs that speaks to this moment is called Here I Lie, Ollie Ollie Oxenfree, a song I featured on this very program not too long ago. Here's a clip.
The newsman said in 2 weeks' time I may drop dead if I go outside, but he don't know the dangers in my bed. My pillow's soft and my room is dark, and if I cough a panic starts, and no one's here to tell me I'm okay. And here I lie all day.
During our time together, Villery was also kind enough to record 2 brand new originals for me from his Brooklyn apartment, which I'm going to feature now. Like that last song, these next 2 were also both written in the past several months while in quarantine, so they too reflect the moment, both the good and the bad of it. I'll start with a classic love song that he wrote, one that resembles in tone and style the old Jerome Kern and Johnny Mercer song I'm Old Fashioned. It's called A Love Song Played Slow. Here's Villery talking me through his songwriting process.
That one didn't have like a direct artist inspiration. It was like a harmonic thing, melody thing that I've been writing for a long time. And once quarantine started, I kind of started writing it as a song person looking out his window, being visited by the same animals every day who are out living in the world and kind of trying to get a report from them, but I didn't get anywhere with that. So then I was thinking about how Rachel, she loves like costume dramas and reading old Victorian literature and stuff. I was just kind of thinking from her perspective, and I hit on this line, loving a love song played slow. And that seemed to kind of fit together with the idea of an old fashioned time that we're in now, where you can't go on a date and then go home with somebody that night. You've got to kind of woo them now that we're all in quarantine. And I was thinking about all the people who have to be dating in this situation and how it must necessarily change things. So anyway, that's where it came from.
Played slow. What love
is worth it. I've tried to learn to unearth it is to feel it's earned. I read romances with ballroom dances. Lips can't say the thoughts conveyed with eyes. Look in mine, dear, and you will know our love, a love song played slow. With ballroom dances, lips can't say the thoughts conveyed with eyes. Look in mine, dear, and you will know our love, a love song.
Singer and songwriter Vilry, from his Brooklyn apartment and his original song, A Love Song Played Slow. I'll close off this episode with another Vilry original, written while in quarantine, and recorded for me again from his Brooklyn apartment. You'll even hear at the end of this a little outdoor summer visitor making an appearance on the street. I won't give it away because it's a nice little treat, but let's just say it provides some good humor to the song. This next song is a song all about the art of songwriting, called Time to Write a Song. First, here's Vilry with a little explanation behind the inspiration.
The thing that inspired me most was I've always wanted to write a If You Give a Mouse a Cookie style song. Do you know that childhood book? And the conceit of that book is you start off with a premise, if you give a mouse a cookie, then you'll have to. And I think the next thing is give him a glass of milk. And then it continues on logically from giving him a glass of milk to whatever they do at the end. And you've kind of gone from a very simple premise to a sort of complicated conclusion. And I always wanted to kind of write a song that was if you, then you. And so this was kind of checking that box, which I've had unchecked for a long time. And then, you know, I early on in the quarantine thing, there were a lot of people talking about how this was going to be a great time for art because everybody was going to be home with nothing to do and all the artists were just going to make stuff. But the truth is that everybody's completely isolated and they don't really have what they need to make the art. And also they're completely depressed because you're stuck at home. You don't have any money. And you know, it's a depressing time. People are dying out in the streets. It's horrible. So the idea that this could be a happy moment for art is kind of ludicrous. So I thought I would write kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing about how if you're depressed, it's a great moment to write music, which I think it's not. but you know, anyway, I like those kind of dark jokes. I think a lot of my songs are premised on dark jokes.
If you've been crying all day long, then you've got time to write a song. And if you're struggling to begin, it may be time to call a friend. And if she's blue the same as you, there's really just one thing to do. to lonely people can't go wrong. If they make time to write a song, it can be happy, you don't have to feel that way. It can be sappy if that's all you have to say. Just make it snappy so the record man will pay and the radio man will play it all day long. Then when you're counting all your cash, you won't be thinking about the past. You knew the secret all along. Just take the time to write a song. Sappy if that's all you have to say. Just make it snappy so the record man will pay and the radio man will play it all day long. Then when you're counting all your cash, you won't be thinking about the past. You knew the secret all along. Just take the time to write a song. Just take the time to write a song. Just take the time to write a song.
Ice cream truck at the end.
That was Villery and the Ice Cream Man performing live from his Brooklyn apartment with his original song, Time to Write a Song. Thanks to Villery for taking the time to chat with me and perform for me and all of you on this episode. If you want to learn more about Villery and his music, you can head over to indianapublicmedia.org/afterglow to find links to his songs. And thanks for tuning into this edition of Afterglow. Afterglow is part of the educational mission of Indiana University and produced by WFIU Public Radio in beautiful Bloomington, Indiana. The executive producer is John Bailey. Playlists for this and other Afterglow programs are available on our website. That's at indianapublicmedia.org/afterglow. I'm Mark Chilla, and join me next week for our mix of vocal, jazz, and popular song from the Great American Songbook, here on Afterglow.